The Mishnah writes at the end of Sota that one of the simanim of Mashiach is that chutzpah yaskeh. There'll be an increase of chutzpah. Okay, anyway, in the beginning of the second parak of Shmos, the Torah says here, if you have a chumash, vayelach ish mibeis levi, vayikach es bas levi. It's a very cryptic parsha, as you can tell, because the Torah does not identify the personalities that are involved. It says a man from Beis Levi went and married a Bas Levi. Pasuk Beis, Batahu Isha Batele Ben, she gives birth to a child, the woman. Batero So Kitohu, she sees that he's a good fella. Batitzmaneu Shlosha Yerachim, she hides him for a period of 3 months. The Torah goes on, but lo yachal ol hatzvino, after 3 months, it was already difficult to hide the child. And she goes ahead and then takes the Tevas Gomer. How do they translate Tevas Gomer?
Weeds. The swampy, shallow parts of the
Nile. No, we're talking about the Teva. The Teva, of course, refers to what? To a kind of bassinet. But the bassinet is made of, as you mentioned,
Straw
reeds, vatachma, vachema, vazovas, in order to insulate it from the water. So she insulates it using pitch and tar. Vatosin ba'as ha'yeled, vatosin ba'asuf ha'sfas ha'yor. Isn't it a striking pasha? Every single element of the pasha is nondescript. We speak about an ish mibeis levi, marrying a bas levi. We speak about a woman who gives birth to a child. She sees the child is good, she hides him, can no longer hide him at a certain point in time. She takes the yeled, places him basuf al sfasayor. And then we have batesatza vachosu mirachot, a sister. Again, a sister who's not described.
Can I have a question?
Of course you can, but I've just begun.
Yeah, I know. It says that the in the last parak, according to Rashi, we already know that Miriam was the housewife of Parah, the house of the Mayaldocha of Parah, the baby. So she was already born, and she was the son and daughter. She was the daughter of the Ish and Isha Bay Lady.
Why do you assume that? It's true that they were among the Bialdos, Shifra and Pua, what you mentioned from Rashi, Gemara Saita. But why in any way do you automatically assume that you connect that with this parak? I would not assume necessarily there's a natural connection. Rav Dafka.
One came from Miriam.
No, I understand what you're saying. And the Shomer, Baruch Hashem. But I'm not necessarily certain that the two have to be connected. But the fact that what I'm simply trying to underscore is that the Torah here is presenting a parsha in a very mysterious kind of fashion. It does not identify any of the personalities, which is very striking in and of itself. And it describes them in different ways. Ish, Bas Levi, Ha'isha, a bit later, Hayeled, Achoso, Basparo, Vateres Hateva, Vatisha Kasabas, Vatikoche, Pasukva, Vatitach, Vateres Hayeled, Vine Nar Boche, Nar, Yeled. It's amazing what's going on over here. Vatachmo Allah, Vatomer, she of course assumes right away it's clearly a Jewish child, Mialdeho Ibrim Zeh. And then the sister tells the daughter of Paro, shall I find a nursing mother who will be able to nurse the child? And she says, go ahead. And she goes, how does she describe then? Her alma? Look how many different descriptions. I have what to say about this, but that's not my interest tonight. But anyway, my father, Shaul, was very troubled by all this. Vatikwas em hayolet. Vatomolo basparo. I mean, Pasuk Tess, Seilichis hayolet azeh venikiuli. Vani atein ischarech alpeyo, to be a wet nurse. Vatika haisho hayolet vatimikeyo. Vayigdal hayolet vatviel le basparo. Vayilo the ben, she became... the child is being nursed, and then the child is now brought to the house of power. He grows up, of course, in aristocratic circumstances, in pomp and ceremony. Ibn Ezra here has a very, very famous and very beautiful discussion about Moshe Rabbeinu, given the kind of environment that he grew up in the house of Paro, aristocratic, sovereign, king, obviously environment, very, very far away from what Kali Yisrael were undergoing, named the Shibud Mitzrayim. Okay, that needs a separate discussion, but I just mentioned it. And suddenly the Torah tells us, Vatikra Shmo Moshe, Almost like an afterthought after this rather lengthy, mysterious kind of discussion that takes place. That's not my interest. My interest is really to focus first on, I want to just essentially articulate several ideas that are fundamental in our Hashkafa. One is, of course, as you pointed out, that who's the one actually who made the shidduch here? Miriam. Rashi quotes, as you mentioned, oh, you're not here. But Rashi quotes that there was a gzera, as we know. What was the gzera? The Pharaoh decreed that all male children will be thrown into the Nile. As a result, the parents of Moshe Rabbeinu are separated from each other, which has halachic, shall we say, foundation. And who once again brought them together, Miriam? Because her argument was, Rashi quotes the argument, the Pharaoh, lo gozar ela alascharim. And your gzera is much more severe than that of Pharaoh. Why? Because your gzera is going to relate to both males and females. So clearly, your gzera is beyond that of Pharaoh. As a result of the time of Miriam, so once again, Amram is convinced by his daughter that she is correct. As a result, vayikach es bas levi, he remarries, as it were, Yocheved, Likuchim Shneim, and as a result of this Vayikach, Moshion Shal Yisrael is born, named in Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Torah describes over here. But just by way of introduction to the first Yisrael that I want to articulate, it would seem that the Svara of Amram is ironclad. There's no question, Chazal tell us, and this is referred to by Rishonim, Amram was one of the Gdolei Ador. And the Rambam writes Hilchos Melachim, actually. Take a look at the Rambam. He speaks about different personalities who introduce mitzvahs. He talks about Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, who introduced tefillah. And Amram also was among those who introduced mitzvahs. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam, if you remember, when the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to Moshe Rabbeinu in the context of the snare, which is a bit later in Perek Gimel, take a look at Perek Gimel for a moment, you'll see that there, how does the Ribbono Shel Olam present himself in Pasuk Vav, Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav, tells Moshe Rabbeinu, don't come too close, take off your shoes, because it's in Yanamakim Kadosh, Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzhak, Elokei Yaakov, he introduces himself as Elokei Avicha. So we're talking about someone back in our Perek, the Perek Beis again, one of the Gdolei Ador, and it would seem that there is a basis for the position of Amram. The Gemara says in Tainus, you're probably familiar with the Gemara, we find the Rashi calls it a Noach. It's a well-known discussion, namely, that during a time of Sakana, there is a there's an issue with Tashmish Hamita. It could be the conjugal relations are not permitted. Rashi calls it in the context of the Mabul. What happens to Noach? The Diukim and the Psukim. We know, we're all familiar with what happened in Mount Torah. There the Torah tells us that before Mount Torah, they separate from their wives. Al Tikshur Elisha, it's a Mishnah in Shabbos. And Moshe Rabbeinu, after Mount Torah, he's the only one who remains in that situation. Because he was told, Hashem told him, Poam Odi Modi. He does not go back to conjugal relations. All the others do. But Moshe Rabbeinu not. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, after Mount Torah, assumed the status of a Navi, par excellence, of Kol Yisrael. And therefore, he was now connected to Hashem as Baruch, as it were. But the fact is that there are circumstances where Tashmish Hamita is not permissible. During a time of Sakana, and the like. So here we have a situation of Sakana, obvious Sakana, and here, Rahman al-Litzan, potentially, children could be thrown into the Nile, and Chazal speak about this also, what the Egyptians did, and how they were able to somehow use the dam of children for mortar, and all kinds of things. So if that's the case, what's the point of having children when they're going to be Rahman al-Litzan? Will be Mekayim Apostle, which is found actually in Tehillim, that speaks about Olaich Nibtu Basola, where your children were dashed on the rocks, as it were. So that would seem to be, shall we say, the opposite of Puravu, the mitzvah of Puravu, is for what purpose? In order, the way the Apostle said in Shayo, Loto, Barada, Shevis, Yitzhara, Hashem wants us to populate the earth, that's how the Chinuch, another Rishonim, right? And here, obviously, when we're going to have children, Rachman al-Litzan, they're in danger of Rahman al-Litzan being killed. Matter of fact, this is a whole discussion that took place in the Shoah as well. During the Holocaust, this question came up. Is the mitzvah pruvu operative during that period of time? Because we're talking about Rahman al-Litzan, the Nazi hordes and the Nazi scourge that wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. So Amram clearly thought that in this context, there is no mitzvah pruvu. The mitzvah pruvu is not applicable. And somehow Miriam who is, according to Chazal, the eternal optimist. She's the optimist par excellence. She is, shall we say, thinking otherwise, and convinced her father, the Gadol HaDor, to once again reunite with his wife, with Yocheved, with her mother. And as a result of that, what Rashi quotes in the Gemara in Saita, Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Nismal Kalabai's Kula Ora, the whole house is now full of light, and ultimately the Moshiach Shal Yisrael is born as a result of this. So obviously there is a maskana that one should come to ineluctably. And that is to say that even though it would seem that Amram was operating with a very sentient, rational kind of svara, his thinking would seem to be impeccable in terms of the logic behind it, quite often, even Anoshim Gedolim could err. It's possible for them to make an error. And I'll give you the classic example of the Gemara you learned last year, for those who were here last year, in Masechet Brachos. And for those who weren't here last year, there's still a chiyuv kol in Masechet Brachos. Masechet Brachos, the Gemara has a famous discussion in the first parak between Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Yeshayahu HaNavi. Those who learned it probably remember the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the Navi Yeshayahu came to visit Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu HaMelech became sick. And the Navi comes to visit him. There's a mitzvah bikur cholim, visiting the sick, and tells him, and these are psukim in Tanakh, it's found actually twice in Tanakh, this discussion in Malachim, also Nivra Yamim, it's reviewed, the same idea. It tells him that you should issue a last will and testament because you're going to die below Tichya. So Chizkiyahu asks him, why is that so? So Yeshayahu tells him, because you were not osik in the mitzvah of Puravu. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu. So Chizkiyahu defends himself with the following argument. The line of argumentation of Chizkiyahu also seems to be eminently logical and eminently reasonable. Chizkiyahu claims that he saw that who's going to be among his sayin, among his children, Rishayim. Menashe. Menashe was a terrible king, wicked king beyond belief. Menashe is the one who was responsible for perpetuating Avodah Zarah and terrible things in Klal Yisrael, terrible averos. So he saw that he's going to be among his sayin, S-E-I-O-N, among his children. And as a result, what's the point? What's the point of having children of that ilk? And therefore, he didn't want to come to the matzah, but the Mishabura writes actually in Shemalach, the Mishabura says actually that when you say at the end of Avodah Tziyon, the following pasuk you should have in mind, you should daven to Hashem, which is what I try to do all the time, namely that you'll have children who are Baruch Hashem, Ovdei Hashem, and Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Where do we have Kavanah? Which line? In the land of Avodah Tziyon. It says, the man, lo niga larik, velo nele la behola. We shouldn't work for nothing, and we should, God forbid, give birth to children who are Rachman Litzan, going to go up to Derech. The Gemara has in Brachos also, that souls who say V'yitan Lecha Matzoi Shabbos are familiar with this, and those who don't say it are also familiar with it because they don't have the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara speaks about that Chas V'Shom, we should have children, She'egdiach Tavshilon Barabin, that they went off the Derech. Chaman Litzan, that could happen to anyone. Chas V'Shom shouldn't happen to anyone, but it can happen. So we dive into Hashem, L'man L'nigal L'rik, we shouldn't, shall we say, work for nothingness, for no reason. So what did he argue? He argued that, what's the point? Why should I be Mekayim the mitzvah of Puravu when, Rachman Litzan, I see children in the offing who are going to be Rishoyim? No one wants to have Rishoyim as children. So what did Yeshayahu HaNavi tell him? Bahadi kafshi Rachman Olam Olam. Which means, that's not your business. That's not your mandate. Your mandate is to have children. Your mandate is to be Mekayim mitzvahs. Do that which is incumbent upon you. Do your Ishtadlus. Have children, obviously, and the other cheshbonos lead to your Ribono Shel Olam. It's not your asik, not your issue. At the end, it's true, Menashe was born. Menashe was a Rasha Marusha. Even though Chazal said, I mean, the only quotes in Shari Tshuva, as he was Shalmi, that at the end of his days, he did Tshuva. How did he do Tshuva? Chata Machteras Tachas Kisi HaKovod. There was a subterranean tunnel dug under the Kisi HaKovod, permitting Menashe to do Tshuva, not in the normal channels, but somehow Ba'akifin. He was able to do tshuva in a very circuitous kind of fashion. But the fact of the matter is that he was a Rasha Verusha, Rav Yama. However, what Yechizkiyahu HaMelech did not see was what happened subsequently. Who is actually the son of Menashe, Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu at Tzadik. He was a great Tzadik. The grandson already is a Tzadik. Tzadik Yisod Olam. And the Navi says about him, I believe in Yemiyahu, Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem, Asher Amarnu Betzilo Nichya Vagoyim. Yoshiyahu was a Tzadik Godel. So the point I'm trying to make is, and Yemiyahu says it, V'hoyo Lefano Melech HaShashav Hashem V'cholavavo. And afterwards, I believe, Tzidkiyahu was born. He's the son of Yoshiyahu. And he's also a Chassid Godel, if I'm not mistaken, Tesis writes, that Niskara Daito Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al-Ador Shel Rishoyim Sheroa Tzidkiyahu. So the point I'm making is the following yesod, which is exactly the vikuach between, shall we say, Miriam and her father. And the same vikuach occurs again in the parsha a little bit later. Namely, I'm talking about the vikuach between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Rabbeinu Shalom. This is based on Chazal and Rashi. If you recall, Hashem actually has to remonstrate with Moshe Rabbeinu to redeem Kol Yisrael. Right after the sneh, or in the context of the sneh, there Hashem tells him that my nation is being subjugated, and they're obviously suffering, and obviously you, Moshe Rabbeinu, should become the leader to take Kol Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So right away, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Look in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yedal, we'll start with that. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yedal, Vayom Moshe Elohim, Mi Anochi Yelech Aparo, V'chi Yotzi Yisrael Yisrael Mitzrayim, I'm not worthy of this mission. So Hashem says, don't worry, Ki Yeyeh Yimach, I'll be with you. I'm sending you as a shliach, and the os is Botziach Hasam Mitzrayim to Abdu Neselokim Al Har Hazeh. There's a Ran at the end of Psachim. The Ran writes that here you have a remez Botziach Hasam Mitzrayim when I take the people out of Egypt to Abdun to Abdu Nun after 50 days. Of course, Sfiras Omer, 50th day is Shavuos Matan Torah. That's exactly what the entire, shall we say, the whole ultimate purpose of Klal Yisrael and of Yitzias Mitzrayim is in order to achieve Matan Torah and Shavuos and the like. Moshe Rabbeinu continues. He says, but he tells Hashem in Pasuk Yud Gimel, "Hinei Anochi Bo Abnei Yisrael v'Amarti L'Elokei Avoseichem Shochani Aleichem V'Amru Li Mashmo." They don't know Hashem. They don't recognize. They don't have a clue who this Hashem is. What am I going to tell them? Hashem tells them, "Ke Asher Eke." According to the Rambam, it's one of the shemes of Hashem. Rambam on the Buchim, Rambam Mishnah Torah. Rashi says, just as I was with them in this Torah, I'll be with them in other Torahs. But Moshe Rabbeinu obviously is not ready to accept the mission that Hashem sends him, because Moshe Rabbeinu also feels, as Rashi quotes a little bit later, that Klal Yisrael is not royal legula. We're not worthy of being redeemed. Wow. And Rashi refers to this. You take a look, learn the Rashi carefully, which I hope you will, Mitzvah Hashem, before the Shabbos. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu argues, and Hashem tells him that Ro Ra'isi Asani Am Hashem in Mitzrayim. I'm reading now Perek Gimel Pasuk Zayin. Hashem hears the cry of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim, and Rashi quotes some Chazal. Ata Roa Ria Achas Vani Yeshihabe Rios. I know it's going to be. Hashem has a more panoramic kind of view than the Basar V'dam, than an individual. Our view is very limited. Our view is opaque. Our ability to see something is very limited. It's circumscribed. And the view of Hashem Yisbarach, obviously, is far more panoramic and far more universal. So he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, even though your vision is of a limited nature, your vision is impaired, it's occluded, but my vision, of course, sees already Klal Yisrael, Maimon HaSinai, going to Eretz Yisrael, that you don't see. The point I'm making is that there's a similarity between these two issues, namely Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem in their dialogue, Miriam and the dialogue with her father, and often we are convinced, beyond convincing, that our svaras are impeccable, that we are completely and totally warranted in what we think. We're convinced, beyond convincing, 1,000% right. And often we are mistaken. And even Gdolei Ador Amram, that Chazal see was one of the Gdolei Ador, also was laboring under an error, and it took Miriam, his daughter, the eternal optimist, to convince him that he was not correct in his thinking, in his understanding of the matter. And similarly, Moshe Rabbeinu is remonstrating with Hashem Yisbarach. Hashem tells him that I have a vision, and Klal Yisrael, even though they're going to undergo subjugation in Mitzrayim, it's what the Ramban calls a Vayigash, Yeridu L'Tzorach Aliyah, it's a descend in order to ascend. But you don't see that. You see right now the situation of Klal Yisrael, and they're not worthy of Geula. I don't know if you ever read, there's a fellow, Thomas Malthus, in 1898, he wrote an essay. And the essay essentially contended that in a short period of time, the world's population will outstrip the world's food supply. And as a result, it will not be possible to sustain the world. The world will not be sustainable. A very well-known essay of Thomas Malthus. So he essentially suggested that the entire world engage in contraception. And we simply not fulfill the mitzvah pruvu. It should be halted in its tracks, because there's no way we can sustain the entire universe. And therefore, that was his thesis. Clearly that thesis, shall we say, runs counter to the entire Hashkamas HaTorah, because the fact of the matter is, the Gemara says in Pesachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we actually say in the davening, on Shabbos morning, the Halal Gadol, no sin lechem lechol basar kidyolam chazdo. The Gemara says in Pesachim, Hashem is zan, mikarni re'emim ha'betzei kinin. Hashem has the ability to sustain every single living being, and the fact of the matter is that obviously he didn't operate with emunah, that was not his thing, as it were. We operate with emunah, and there's no question that we know this for a fact, that one scientist can go ahead and produce, if you will, with scientific methodology, can produce one pill, and that pill could somehow sustain a person who knows how long, with all the nutrients embedded therein. We, Baruch Hashem, have recourse to science and technology and other kinds of things. We believe that Gemara says, Man deyav chayv yav mezayni, the one who gives life, he also gives mezonos, he sustains the world. So these are two different perspectives. But Thomas Malthus had this, and many, many people subscribe to him. And there are countries today that are very into this thesis. Namely, two countries in the world, which are probably somewhat overpopulated. Again, they're not China's number one, India number two. And are you familiar with the laws in China? In terms of how many children one is allowed to have? One what? One male. What about females? I see the Elbogen family has been hanging out together. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, we came back just in time, Ari. He needed chizuk. I'm just jesting. Anyway, I'll give you another example of what I'm referring to. That do you remember that in Vayechi, I believe we just read it on Shabbos. So here we have Yosef brings Ephraim and Menashe for a bracha before Yaakov Avinu, and the Torah says that Yosef had one understanding of things and Yaakov had another understanding of things. I spoke about it actually last week, if you remember. Namely, Sikel as Yadav ki Menashe Bechor. He essentially inverts the hand of Yaakov because he felt that the primary bracha should be given to Menashe, and he tells his father, Lochein Avi, Kizeh Abachor, Simi Mincha Al Rosho, the right hand should be placed on his head. And Yaakov answers, Yadati Bini Yadati. Gamhu Yelam, Gamhu Yigdal, Viulam, Mochi Vakoto Yigdal Vimeno, Vizari Yamalagoyim. Do you recall that? Rashi indicates, and we discussed last week, if you remember, Menashe represents Malchus, represents Manhigus, Ephraim represents Torah, and Torah, pardon the expression, trumps Malchus. I'm very into that. In other words, Yaakov said, that which you know, I also know. But I have other ideas that you don't have. I know that which is going to be in the future, namely, the role of Ephraim as opposed to the role of Menashe. Okay, so here again, you see that there are many examples where people think that their svaras are ironclad, and are well-founded or well-grounded, and in the end, sometimes they are not necessarily correct in their thinking. So this is a very fundamental concept in our hashkafa. That is to say, we have to do our ishtadlus. There's no question that all of us have to do ishtadlus in different areas. The pasuk says in the Sifrei Reis and Dvarim that in the context of the mitzvah of tzedakah, Naso titein lo, Val yera levavcha besitcha lo. Don't worry when you give tzedakah. Some people don't want to give tzedakah because I'm emptying out my pockets. When I'm emptying out my pockets, I won't have anything left in the coffers. for my own needs. So the Torah said, don't worry. The person will be the recipient of the bracha as a result of giving tzedakah. And there's no question, you're even allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that says in Shulchan Aruch, V'avikreisu lechem bracha ad bulidai, Nanavi says, and Tesis writes, in Tainus, Aser, the Gemara said, V'shil shetis asher, and in general, you're allowed to test Hashem when it comes to tzedakah, you'll be the recipient of the bracha. So my point is that it says in the Sifrei, U'berach Hashem lokecha b'chol asher taseh, yochal yeshei batel, maybe a person doesn't have to do any ishtadlus, you can just sit back and expect the manna to come down from heaven. So it says, no, Tamalomar, B'chol Asher Taseh. But the fact of the matter is that a person has to do ishtadlus. But at the end of the day, there's no question that there is a divine plan at work, and we are very much subject to that divine plan. There's no stira, the way the Mishnah writes in Pirkei Avos, HaKol Tzafui, Varshus Nasuna, even though Hashem is, shall we say, everything is preordained, and Hashem has the foresight to see everything that's going to be, but we still maintain our Bechira Chavshis. I'm not getting into that issue right now, but that issue requires a lot of attention. But there is Tzvei Dinim. There's no contradictions. It's a dialectic that's at work here. It's a kind of tension which is built into the very fabric of the system. That Hashem sees everything and has a divine plan, and we are simply, as I say, puppets who are being moved by the grand puppeteer. We're being moved to and fro. However, we still have Bechira Chavshis. Anyway, the point I'm making is that we have to be very, very careful and don't somehow get carried away by thinking that only our thinking is correct and no one else is, has any basis for what they're doing or what they're saying. And this is a Yesod Godel that I feel is an important Yesod I wanted to get across here. And I just now want to talk about the second Yesod, which I'm very fond of and always speak about many, many times already. Vayokam Melech Chodesh al Mitzrayim, Asher lo yada as Yosef. Here in Shmuel's Perek Aleph Pasuk Ches, Rashi quotes Machlokes in the Gemara in Seitan Daf Yud Aleph. Namely, there was a new king that did not know about Yosef. The Gemara says that one opinion says it was literally a new king. One said it was the same king with new Xeros. Of course, is it possible he didn't know of Yosef? What, he didn't have any knowledge of Egyptian history? Didn't know what happened? But the Torah meant is that even though he knew who Yosef was, he had no interest in knowing who he was. Why? Because he lacked Hakaras HaTov. He lacked basic gratitude for all that Yosef had done for the Egyptian people. There's a long medrash here. The medrash says that initially his intent was not to harm Klal Yisrael, but the Egyptian leaders asked for his advice. Namely, how do we get rid of our main problem? And as everyone knows here, the main problem in the world today is the existence of the Jewish people. That's clear. And Paro responded, you're out of your minds. So the Medrash goes on to say that till then the survival is due to the actions of Yosef. Yosef salvaged the Egyptian economy. I'm just translating the Medrash here. Had Yosef not foreseen the years of famine, they would have all died. But when he saw that Paro was not playing along with them, they decided to do the following. All of a sudden he was deposed from the throne, no longer the king. And guess what happens when someone loses his seat in the Knesset? Or for that matter, the Habdil, in the Senate or the Congress. They're not happy about that. And so quickly, they change their position. Most politicians, 99% are opportunists, shame kamo, par excellence, those here, those there. And all of a sudden, Bayonka Melechadash al Mitzrayim. All of a sudden, a new king. Of course, he was the same king. But a new king in terms of what? A new approach they decided to take, namely, lacking Hakaras HaTov, and as a result, all kinds of terrible decrees the Torah describes over here, imposing slave labor, killing all sorts of the Jewish males by nice, heinous methods of throwing them into the river. And why would a king impose such terrible things upon people living there? He should have had some Hakaras HaTov. So the answer, of course, is that this Yesod is a Yesod Godel in our Hashkafa, and Chazal speak a lot about this. In Shmos here, Perakei, Pasuk Beis, Chazal say on that Pasuk, when Paro is approached by Moshe Rabbeinu, and right away he says, he was accustomed to knowing the name of the different gods. Who is your God? Lo yadati es Hashem, the God of Israel, lo ashalech, I don't know who your God is. So Chazal say, today he does not know who Hashem is, but initially how did it begin? Asher lo yadas Yosef. First we start with, he doesn't know who Yosef is, and tomorrow he doesn't know who Hashem is. So Chazal say, mi shekofer b'tovaso shechaver, l'sol kofer b'tovaso shakadosh baruch hu. First the person denies the good that his fellow man has done for him, and then at the end, you become a kofer ba'ikar, you deny what Hashem has done for you. And the fact of the matter is that a tzaddik is someone who's makir tov to everyone. We know that the initial makos that were brought about by Moshe Rabbeinu, as you know from the psukim here, namely, after Moshe Rabbeinu was born, and now the time came about to bring about the makos of Dam and Tzfadea, who initiated it? Aaron, of course, not Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason is obvious, because Moshe Rabbeinu owed a debt of gratitude to the Nile and could not possibly smite the Nile. And Chazal say even inanimate objects somehow have some sort of ratzon, even though it's hard to understand it. The Ramban divides the Bria into four categories. The four categories are domim, tzomea, chai, medaber. Domim are inanimate objects, which automatically we assume have absolutely no life to them whatsoever, and no ratzon to them. That's not completely true, because Chazal tell us about the stones around Yaakov Avinu's head. The Seals of Sharm discusses this. Very beautiful mini essay he has on this topic. Ola yaniach tzadik es rosho, the Gemara. Each one was vying to be the pillow around Yaakov Avinu's head. So obviously there is some element of ratzon apparently even to inanimate objects, as you see from that Chazal. But whatever the case is, there's domim, tzomeach, is the vegetable kingdom, chai, the animal kingdom, medaber are human beings, medaberim, the way the Targum writes, vayi adam lenefesh chaya, the ruach mamallah, our uniqueness, our ability to express ourselves. So here, I'm telling you that it would not be appropriate for Moshe Rabbeinu to carry out that action against the Nile, because Moshe Rabbeinu, as I said, was saved. And as a result, Hakar Satov, the same thing applies, of course, to Dam and Tzfadea and Kinim. Again, had that plague set into motion by hitting the ground, and the Egyptian earth held Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember. Moshe Rabbeinu actually buried the Egyptian in the sand. So there, Hakaras HaTov precluded Moshe Rabbeinu from carrying out that action. So Hakaras HaTov is a fundamental yisod, and unquestionably, it's probably, according to the Chaim HaSavavos, the most important yisod in Kol HaTorah Kula. It's the tashtit, it's the foundation of every other yisod, is based on Hakaras HaTov. If you remember, in Bamidbar, perhaps you do remember, in Bamidbar, take a look if you have the Chumash, it should be in Perek, Lamed Aleph. Perek Lamed Aleph, Mamidba Parshas Matos, Pasuk Beis. There the Torah tells us, in the war against Midian, Vayidabe Hashem Moshe Lemon, the Kov Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, Meisam Minyonim, Achar Tiyosev El Amecha. Hashem commands Moshe to wage war against Midian. It caused a lot of tzoras to Klal Yisrael. But it was not Moshe Rabbeinu who was sent at the end. Who was sent? Read the Pesukim a bit later. Pasuk Vav, Vayishach Oso Moshe, El v'amata latzova, osam yes, Pinchas ben Elazar HaKohen latzova. Pinchas was the one who was sent. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu felt a particular closeness to the Nine of the Midian. Why? There he found shelter when he was running away from Paro. So even though Midian acted in a terrible fashion towards Klal Yisrael, and this was a Milchemes Tekaba, a war to take vengeance upon them, and yet, Hakaras HaTov forbade Moshe Rabbeinu from carrying out this action. I always am very fond of what I heard from Hagoyin, Rav Yisrael Zev Gusman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I say it over, I heard it from him in 1971, 72, when I was in Eretz Yisrael. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Netzach Yisrael here in Yerushalayim, and he used to personally water the bushes in the front garden of the yeshiva, which is always wondrous to me why the Rosh Yeshiva was one of the Dolei Ador. He was on the Bezin of Rav Chaim Eisen when he was 19 years old. A genius. He's the author of a sefarim called Kuchas Hashurim, on the number of receptors in Shas. He was a Magid Shir, par excellence, Shein Kamo, massive Talmud Chacham. Somehow he always found time to water the plants. Why did he have to do it himself? Wasn't there a gardener who could take care of the rest of the gardening? Could have done as good a job? So he answered when he was asked a question, that was his Hakaras HaTov. When he fled from Vilna, I think either from the communists or the Nazis, he hid behind bushes in order to evade his pursuers, and at one point, Abchai Meza used to walk with him, taught him about berries and the like, and those bushes and berries saved his life. And to show gratitude, he watered them himself. The problem is they weren't the same plants, the same berries that saved him. So why in heaven's name is he worrying about these berries and these plants. Decades later, in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, the answer is it was a species of plant that saved him. He felt Hakaras HaTov towards all of it. A very famous Maise. And he told over Rav Gusman Zatzal, a Shidduch Gebetzes in Bava Kamma. A Shidduch Gebetzes in Bava Kamma on Tzadik Beis. That's where it's found. The Shidduch Gebetzes tells over that the Rif was once a guest at the home of a very wealthy person, and his host owned the bathhouse and invited the Rif to make use of the bathhouse, and the Rif did in fact do so and enjoyed it immensely. And after a period of time, this wealthy Jew lost all of his possessions and had to sell his bathhouse in order to pay off all his creditors. And both buyer and seller asked that the Rif evaluate or assess the value of the bathhouse and sit on a bezdin to determine what its value is. And the Rif said, no, how can I do so? Because I was nene from this bathhouse. He gave me so much pleasure that I have no right to go ahead and sit on a din Torah. And again, he was not talking about Hakaras HaTov he had towards the owner, but about Hakaras HaTov towards the bathhouse, towards the merchatz. Amazing. Note, he would not have involved himself in a case regarding an inanimate object that he derived benefit from. This is again based on the same yisod, yisod of Hakaras HaTov, which is the most important yisod, probably, as I said, in Kol HaTorah Kula. And that's exactly what, in effect, Paro should have demonstrated Hakaras HaTov not only to Yosef, but the entire Kol Yisrael. Often we say, when we speak about a tzaddik, we say, Zichrono Livracha, Zichuso Yogin Aleinu. You ever heard that expression? His chus should somehow protect us. What do we mean when we say about the Chafetz Chaim Zatzal, or our Soloveitchik Zatzal, Zichuso Yogin Aleinu? What does that mean? In the case of my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, there's no question. I owe him my entire life. Hakaras HaTov, every step of the way. Without my Rebbe, I would basically be a complete dolt and dullard. A total batchan. As it is, I'm half a batchan. But my Rebbe saved me from being an entire batchan. That's what a Rebbe does. He gives you direction in your life. He provides you with guideposts and with goals and with ways how to achieve those goals. But let's say the Chafetz Chaim Zatzal, I was not a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. I am a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. I learned the Mishnah Berurah with precision, with exactitude. U'b'chol zos, I still didn't learn exactly what the Chafetz Chaim Zatzal derogah z'chus yagad aleinu. The answer is we ask Hashem to have Hakaras HaTov to the Chafetz Chaim for his sitkus, and given that we're part of the same nation, Hashem should show Hakaras HaTov to us as well. Kach shamati mi'agoyin rav nevin sol shlita. Kama pomin. A bit of a chiddush. And obviously, what I'm saying is relevant not just to all generations, but even more so in our day, and specifically to our parents. The yisod that the Rishonim say, Kibbutz Av V'Em, is founded upon Hakaras HaTov. It's founded upon the doctrine of showing gratitude to our parents, who essentially, there's no way we can possibly compensate them for all they did for us, raising us, rearing us, whining us, dining us, more or less doing whatever is in our good interests, our best interests. And obviously, Kal V'Chomer Ben Moshe Kal V'Chomer, this applies to husbands and wives. And I always speak about this topic in the context of husbands and wives. Hakaras HaTov. Chazal, by the way, someone mentioned this to me today, that the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael is always viewed as a marriage. You can say that. Ve'erastachli le'olam, we say in the morning, we put on tefillin. Ve'erastachli b'tzedek, v'chesed, v'mishma, v'rachamim, ve'erastachli be'emunah, v'yadat et Hashem. That's the yachas that we have with Hashem is Barach. And even we know that Klal Yisrael, we're going up from the Yam Suf to the desert, and we underwent many difficult tests along the way. And matter of fact, if you take a look over here in Shemos, since we're at it, in Shmuel's Perek Yud Beis. So the Torah says, right at the very beginning, he took in Lamed Zayin, Lamed Tes. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael miram se sukosa, kishen Shmuel's Elab Ragli Agvarv Levan Mitov, v'gam Erev Rab Aloi Tov, Metzonu Bakar Mekne Govei Meod, v'yafu es habatzek asher otzim Mitzrayim, Ugos Matzos Kilochomis, Kigorshim Mitzrayim. We were thrown out of Egypt. There was no time to make any kind of preparation, provisions for ourselves. But Rashi quotes over here in Pasuk Lamates from a famous Chazal that this tells the praise of Klal Yisrael. It says Rashi in Pasuk Lamates, "Gam Tzedo Lo Asalem, Magi Chivkon Shir Yisrael Shalom, Rehek Neitzel Amidbar Velo Tzedo." How can we go out to the desert without a care package? Elohai Aminu, Va'ocho, Hushim Mefurish Mekabalah, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, the Rebbe says in Perek Beis, Zachati lo chesed nevarayich avas kulosayich. 1,000 years later, Hashem remembers this. Hashem remembers the kindness of your youth. Avas kulosayich, the love of your bridal days. Lech teichachem v'amid b'v'eretz lozua, you follow me in the wilderness, in an unsown land. Because Hashem, despite all the terrible avers that we did over this 1,000-year period, He finally remembers His early days of marriage to Klal Yisrael. So obviously, I tell people who are married, sometimes a fair number of years, they should remember the recollections of love and affection that existed during their period of engagement, the early days of their marriage. Zachati lo chesed nevarayich, avas v'losayich. I'll just mention the famous story, which I'm very fond of, Rabbi Levine, Zechatzal Debrocha. I'm very into that book, which I assume you read. Which book am I referring to? Atzadik in our time. I probably read it 100 times. Maybe more. One of the few books I've read in English as many times as I did. So Rabbi Levine once heard of a particular community which was known the men were not treating their wives properly. He decided to attend the local shul in order to give a talk about the importance of honoring your wife. So who came to hear him? Hagoyin Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Zechatzal Debrocha came to hear Rabbi Levine. When Rabbi Levine was finished, Yisrael Zalman Meltzer went over to him and thanked him. Wow! He told him, what a beautiful drasha. And he said to Rabbi Levine, after doing some soul searching, it's clear that I've not fulfilled my obligation towards my wife, and I'll do my best to improve my relationship with her. The Gaon Ador tells us to Rabbi Levine. Rabbi Levine was mortified. He said, my words were not intended for Kvod Harav, for the great Yosh Yeshiva. Everyone knows how beautifully you treat your wife. Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was not convinced. He says, who else would the king direct these words of Musa if not to me? I have to honor my wife more. I don't know if anyone else took the words of Rabbi Levine to heart, but Rabbi Zalman certainly did. This is found in the Sefer, a sort of the Hebrew volume, Ish Chassid Hoya, also about Rabbi Levine. It's well known how well Rabbi Zalman treated his wife. I don't know if you know the story. I'll try to end with this. Rabbi Zalman, actually, in his younger days, he was not in the best of health. It was not clear how long he'd be able to survive. The woman who was supposed to become his wife, so went to the Chafetz Chaim and asked him, should I marry this fellow whose health was not up to par, not up to snuff? So the Chafetz Chaim responded, even if to live only for one more year, it'd be worth her while to marry this young Talmid Chacham. The end of the story is they moved to Eretz Yisrael. I think Rabbi Zalman lived till the age of, if I'm not mistaken, 89 or 90. Of course, when you have the bracha, the Chafetz Chaim, that's a bracha. The Gemara says that Tzadik Gezer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. A Tzadik is Gezer, Hashem is Mekayim. So a great man knows what it means to honor his wife, with or without the drasha of Rabbi Levine. People understand they're obligated to honor their wives, and another gadol understands without your wife, you're lacking part of your tzelem elokim. You're a plag gufa, according to the Zohar. You're a half a body. You are truncated. Means you are an elephant without a trunk. No, just joking. And the fact of the matter is that Akaras HaTov is the yisoy that you say this. So we have to be makuto. And I'll just end by pointing out that you are certainly aware of the obligation of Akaras HaTov, as I said, not just to parents, but to your chaverim, to anyone who does you who does chasadim to you and for you.
So the Rav Shiva.
Obviously, what is obligatory in Makir Tov to one's Rabbeim? I'm talking about the Rabbeim, this yeshiva. They are, we have outstanding Rabbeim. Rabbeim who are, we have used Daiti, Tamidei Chacham, Muflogim, and Sadikim, and people are, who are Meisa Nefesh, and who really want to be connected to their Talmidim, and that is the ideal Akar Satov. I feel in my own personal life that I owe everything to my Rabbeim. Unquestionably, as I said, without them, I would be a total dolt and dullard. Perhaps you'll look up those words. But basically it means a buffoon. I would have been involved in buffoonery my entire life, if not for my other. I owe them my entire life. They directed my life. I had the great schus of being, I don't know if I'm worthy of being a Talmud of his, but I was connected to my Rebbe, Rav Nissim Alper Zatzal, for about 21 years. I didn't move a tzad v'shal of my life without consulting him. It was at Mechasana, and way before that, and way after that, I think I told the story that I once went to Menachem Ovel, the Scheinberg family, when Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg was nifta. So Lisa Malper is married to the daughter of Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Rebbe Sin Zelda Alpert. She should, Hashem should be Marach Yamecha. And so I came to their house, and Rav Simcha Scheinberg, Hashem Shirim Marach Yomov, told his sister, Rebbe Sin Zelda, "Do you know who this is?" Referring to me. She looks at me and she says, "I know who that is. That's the nudnik who called my husband at 1 o'clock in the morning." That's what I used to do. I thought that was a praise. She was complimenting me. Was she not? Josh? Push. So I was in the process, in the practice of stalking Gedolei Yisrael, and thought it was a good thing. And as a result, I saw a lot of the Anhogas, and how they behaved, and how they were models. And I think that that's a good thing. Of course, you should do it in a respectable kind of fashion, with Tzurah Mechubedet, and you should, with Darkei Shalom, with the Papa de Acheretz. And I tried my best to do that. My father Hashem, my mother Hashem, tried to teach me. I'm not sure they were that successful, but they tried. They were mishtadel. And so Akaras HaTov is a fundamental yisod, the yisod ha-yisod, as we call it to our kula. If we have Akaras HaTov to all those that we really are worthy of having Akaras HaTov to, obviously, a fortiori, as they say, kal v'chemeh b'menoshe kal v'chemeh to melech malchi ha-mlochim ha-kodesh bochu, to maki tev, I'll call neshima u'neshima for every breath that we're able to breathe.
The idea about the volatility, similar idea of a titanium to say, I'm part of